Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts and the way we live our lives please you, make you glad. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. As you know, I spent my last 3 weeks in Africa. A little bit of time in Zambia, a tiny bit in Zimbabwe, mostly in South Africa. I loved Africa, and I am eager to go back again. Next time, I hope to Sierra Leone and Liberia. But just like Bodie Knepp said to us last month about his trip earlier this summer, my time in South Africa was transformative. For those of you who have not been there, and for those of you who know it far better than I do, Africa is an amazing place. Wide open, full of big sky, extravagant sunrises and sunsets, wild landscape, wild animals. It is beautiful, full of charisma. Ernest Hemingway is said to have written, "I never knew of a morning in Africa when I woke up and was not happy." That may be a little romanticized, but I think it is possible. South Africa has a fascinating history. It was settled by Europeans. It was valuable because all east-west trade had to go around its southernmost tip, the Cape of Good Hope, until the Suez Canal was built. First the Dutch and then the British settled in South Africa's resource-rich land. They claimed it as a space for white Europeans. But to do that, they had to move aside in some way the native Africans who had been there for a long time. When gold was discovered there in the 1860s, the Dutch brought in first white mine workers and then slaves imported from India. Finally, it was too labor-intensive, even for those groups to be enough, and so they employed the African natives. But how would these very different groups of people live together? Apartheid was their solution. Apartheid is literally the Dutch Afrikaans word for aparthood, as opposed to neighborhood. It was simply assumed that people of different races would want to live separately, with as little contact between them as possible. It was always present in South Africa, but in 1948, apartheid was named and declared the policy of the South African government. Hundreds of laws were passed to enforce separation of the races. Group areas called Bantustans were established, literally the drawing of geographic shapes to keep black and white people separate. It was a very strict social structure in three categories: white Europeans, black Africans, and in between those two, a class called colored, which meant Indians or other people of mixed race. Although I'm not sure how mixing happened, because interracial marriage was also illegal. There were pass laws, which required every person to carry a passbook identifying their race, so that if they were caught outside of their designated area, they were detained and jailed. Because they were seen as having value only as they were needed, it was illegal for black Africans to be unemployed. If they did not have a job, they could be shipped out of the city and back to the tribal areas where their families had come from. Men who worked in the mines were separated from their families and forced to live in barracks. Police raided homes in black townships regularly, and they carted off to jail anyone whose passbook did not have the proper signatures or who couldn't establish their employment. It was a miserable, dangerous, precarious existence for black people in South Africa, and they comprised 90% of the population. By the 1960s, a resistance movement had taken shape. This was the movement that Nelson Mandela joined, first as a youth. Mandela was subject to the pass laws just like everyone else, and so he was jailed several times for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. He couldn't vote or hold office, but his vision and his life's work where it was a South Africa in which people of all races would live with equality and dignity. For a long time, he advocated nonviolence, but after years of inaction and non-responsiveness from the government, he was convinced that militance was required. And so finally, he trained for and then he led a program of sabotage against the government as a way of deepening resistance to the status quo. He was arrested again and again, and he was finally charged and tried and convicted of treason. In 1964, he was sentenced to life in prison. With a handful of other leaders from the movement, Mandela was imprisoned on Robben Island, which is off the coast of Cape Town, sort of like Alcatraz is to San Francisco. There were no white prisoners in the prison on that island, only black and colored people. The guards enforced a caste system even there to foment mistrust and conflict among the prisoners. I don't know if you can read that, but there was different food for the prisoners in these two groups. The coloreds got bread, the blacks didn't. Different clothes, coloreds wore long pants, the blacks wore shorts, even in long cold winters. It was hard labor. Mandela and his comrades did back-breaking work every day in the island's rock quarry. But they made a significant mistake at that prison. They kept all the political prisoners together in one area. And so Mandela and the others found ways to talk with each other and to plan and to keep their hope alive. Mandela resisted in small and subtle ways. He refused to submit to even the most demeaning forms of mistreatment. He wrote the first half of his autobiography, and other people smuggled out the pages he had written one at a time. He exercised regularly. He found ingenious ways to get and to read newspapers, and he never gave up hope that he would be released. Mandela was imprisoned for 27 years. While he was locked away, the resistance movement continued outside. Police turned their guns on peaceful demonstrators. In 1975, thousands of school children marched in protest of a requirement that all schools be conducted in the Afrikaans language, which only white people spoke. The police fired on the children, killing and injuring many. A young resistance leader named Stephen Biko was mysteriously killed in police custody. And the rest of the world began to notice and to pay attention to what was happening in South Africa. There were boycotts and sanctions, first by the United Nations and then by other countries as well, including the United States. Pressure on the government built. South Africa was largely isolated from the rest of the world. From prison, Mandela sensed that a moment for change had arrived. He sent a letter to the Prime Minister, F.W. de Klerk, suggesting that they meet and discuss a compromise. De Klerk was both a worthy opponent and a courageous ally. And on February 11, 1990, no doubt for his own political reasons, De Klerk released Mandela from prison, very publicly. Black South Africans were overjoyed, but if you watch the video of De Klerk's speech to Parliament when he announced this pardon, you can see that none of the members of Parliament was smiling. They knew that everything was about to change in their country. Negotiations toward a new South Africa included every political party and every racial group in the country. And in 1993, they signed a new constitution. Listen in this preamble to the constitution for the mutual respect that it contains. We, the people of South Africa, recognize the injustices of our past. We honor those who suffered for justice and freedom in our land. We respect those who have worked to build and develop our country. And we believe that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in our diversity. South Africa's constitution is one of the most progressive in the world. It prohibits discrimination on any basis, including race, gender, sexual orientation, disability, and religion. It guarantees the right to education and health care. Every racial group and ethnic group is declared equal. And I heard people there say proudly that their flag has 6 colors, more than any other country in the world. It's a combination of the British and Dutch flags, red, white, and blue, and the African tribal flags, green, yellow, black. The peaceful transition to a new public, with one group giving over power to certain defeat in a popular vote, was almost unheard of in human history. And in 1993, Mandela and de Klerk together were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Mandela ran for president in the first election in which all people were permitted to vote. He promised that he would serve no more than one term, and he made forgiveness the hallmark of his presidency and of the new South African Republic. He set the tone in very strategic and visible ways with a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, by inviting his Robben Island prison guard to be an honored guest at his inauguration. He unified the country by publicly supporting the white cricket team in an international competition. And you may remember that scene from the movie Invictus. He insisted that South Africa would be a nation not just for the black Africans whose party won the election, but for all people of every race and color. He worked to fill himself and his country with love and respect for everyone. He showed people that freedom and joy lie in forgiveness, not prejudice. Bill Clinton once said to Mandela, "Tell me the truth. When you were walking down the road from the prison that last time, didn't you hate them?" And Mandela answered, "I did. I am old enough to tell the truth. I felt hatred and fear, but I said to myself, if you hate them when you get in that car, you will still be their prisoner. I wanted to be free, and so I let it go." I heard echoes of that attitude in many people that I talked with in South Africa. Former prisoners now lead the tours of the prison on Robben Island. A man named Kenny proudly showed me Soweto, The township outside of Johannesburg, where he was forced to live for the first 20 years of his life and where he was jailed when he was 11. Another man named Africa Mundi showed me where he lives in the shabbiest homes I have ever seen. Still hopeful. All of them said in some way, they are working on their own forgiveness, knowing that hatred and desire for revenge have the power to imprison you. Now, Mandela did not succeed in everything he hoped to do in South Africa. Changing the laws and changing the country are two different things. In many ways, the country is a mess. Many Black Africans live in townships in conditions as poor as they are anywhere. South Africa has the greatest disparity between rich and poor of any country in the world. After apartheid ended, the whites largely abandoned the cities. The big cities are just now becoming vibrant again. Unemployment is high. The current government is a mess. Everyone knows it is corrupt and incompetent. The country is dangerous. Almost everyone lives behind locked gates. But Mandela is universally loved and respected. And even after his death, he is still inspiring a vision of equality and dignity and hope for the whole country. His face is everywhere. His words are on billboards and the sides of buildings. When he died, a soccer stadium that held 40,000 people was not large enough to contain those who came to mourn. And his memory inspires the kind of hope that you will hear in these voices as they sing, "Nkosi Sikelel' Afrika," which is an African anthem of hope and blessing. And if you know this hymn, you are welcome to stand and sing along.
Sikelel' Afrika. God bless Africa.
Sapolwayo
must forgive, Jesus said in the passage from Matthew that George read this morning, to be free to worship God. You must forgive, Mandela said, to be free to live. May it be so for us. Amen.